Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Quick, what's green, totals almost 2,200 pages and weighs nearly 10 pounds. Why, that would be the fiscal 2008 budget the president delivered to Congress today. Four volumes detailing how the White House wants to spend $2.9 trillion. If you ask Congress, though, it might not be worth the paper it's printed on. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Fellows. Millions of businesses worldwide choose Fellow shredders for their shredding needs. Fellows, for information protection you can depend on. More at fellows.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It's good to have you here on this Monday. Today is the 5th of February. Ask any economist, and they'll tell you, before you can figure out what the future holds, you have to lay out the ground rules. Assumptions, they're called. The president makes a few of them in the budget he sent up to Capitol Hill today. Steady economic growth and low inflation to start with. Probably not so controversial. But our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale reports the president's assumptions look more questionable down at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue.
The president's budget increases defense spending, including $141 billion for the war in Iraq, expands health care, tuition grants, and ethanol incentives, while making tax cuts permanent and eliminating the deficit by 2012. Democrats, like Senate Budget Committee Chairman Kent Conrad of North Dakota, say he can't do it all.
The president's proposal, if adopted as presented, would take us right over the cliff into a chasm of debt.
One likely source of friction will be the president's ideas to cut domestic spending. Especially unwelcome will be a proposal to save nearly $100 billion on entitlements, such as Social Security and Medicare. Democrats say they can avoid reductions in social programs by rescinding the president's tax cuts on the wealthy. But the president's budget director, Rob Portman, says that's a non-starter.
To increase taxes would put at risk the economy that's generated the revenues that are largely responsible for putting us in a better fiscal condition.
Another way Democrats plan to bankroll their own ambitious agenda is to close the tax gap, uncollected taxes on income people hide from the government. The IRS estimates the tax gap is $290 billion a year, a potential fat source of revenue. But on C-SPAN this morning, the IRS's taxpayer advocate, Nina Olson, said it's difficult to collect the government's take from the cash economy.
That could range anywhere from the vendor on the street who is selling hot dogs to the person mowing your lawn to people making sales on eBay, because right now there's no reporting of that.
The White House budget anticipates earning $29 billion over the next 10 years by requiring better reporting of cash transactions and the capital gains earned by stock investors. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Clearly, the president and Congress have different ideas about how to spend our money. And as happens every year on budget day, skeptics call the president's spending plan dead on arrival. But even a DOA budget can offer some insight, clues about which way the policy winds are blowing. Aviation types in Washington have spent much of the day today reading the budgetary fine print, as Nancy Marshall Genzer reports.
Analysts who got a look at the Federal Aviation Administration budget today say there's going to be a big shakeup in how the FAA is funded. Right now, the agency's budget comes from a mix of things, including fuel surcharges and taxes on plane tickets. But the FAA budget alludes to a new system that might be on the way, user fees connected to actual usage of the air traffic control system. Andy Sabula of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association says that won't fly.
Right now, you get the sense that the aviation community is being turned to and said, we'd really like to have a blank check. And so, obviously, we're not going to walk in and say, yeah, that's fine with us.
Sabula's read of the budget shows the FAA collecting about $8 billion in user fees in 2009. But Aviation Week's David Bond says it's not that clear yet. He does see a move toward user fees, but he says they'd be fair, with bigger planes paying more.
I think the smaller airplanes are probably going to need some sort of a break.
Still, if you give a break to them, the big corporate cats are going to want one too. But aviation analyst Richard Abulafia says the private jet business is growing faster than commercial aviation, and the FAA thinks companies that own jets need to pay more.
If you look at the hundreds of planes that have come online, each of these represent an additional source of funding.
Now, Abulafia and the other budget readers are tuning their crystal balls into Capitol Hill. Analysts say it's hard to say if Congress will go for the proposed user fees. One thing's for sure, the debate will be turbulent. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Next time you find yourself in a Ford dealership, take a close second look at the guy trying to seal the deal, because it might be Ford CEO Alan Mulally. Over the weekend, Mulally was giving a speech to a National Dealers Association. One of them invited him to spend a couple of days on the sales floor. Mulally said it was cool that they know he likes to spend time with his customers. The troubles that Ford and General Motors are having are pretty well known. Until about a year ago, Daimler Chrysler was the bright spot among Detroit's big three automakers. But lately, even the German-American company's been struggling. Today, the Detroit News reports Daimler Chrysler is putting together a major restructuring plan. Marketplace's Elisa Roth explains we'll know a whole lot more next week.
Chrysler's not talking till Valentine's Day. That's when the company releases its earnings report and details of the restructuring. But word on the street is that Chrysler's looking at job and plant cuts much like those at rivals GM and Ford. Chrysler already went through a major restructuring about 7 years ago, so for a while it was cruising along, even when GM and Ford were suffering. Greg Gardner of Harbor Consulting says American drivers' tastes have changed, and now all of the big three automakers are facing the same challenge.
Chrysler's trying to adjust to the change in type of vehicles that are growing in demand, principally midsize and smaller crossover and passenger car type vehicles, and away from midsize and larger sport utility vehicles.
He says the country's fourth biggest car maker is also trying to figure out how many assembly plants and workers it actually needs. But more titillating than proposed plant cuts is rumor of greater transatlantic collaboration. Word is Mercedes and Chrysler could start sharing pieces like chassis and suspension systems. Economist Stephen Zachary of the Center for Automotive Research says the company has to be careful not to dilute the cachet of the luxury brand.
Certainly, if I was thinking about buying an $80,000 Mercedes and I found out that the $35,000 Chrysler up the street was essentially the same vehicle, I might hesitate.
That kind of collaboration can work well, though. Zachary points out that Lexus is basically a dolled-up Toyota Camry with a wildly successful marketing campaign. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Investors didn't care a whit about Washington and the budget. Not even corporate deal-making could lift investors out of their doldrums. Today, we'll have the details when we do the numbers. People who keep track of ad revenue at CBS Sports are probably breathing a sigh of relief today. Early numbers show the Super Bowl drew about the same size audience as it did last year, something near 92 million people. That'll mean ad rates can probably go up next time around. But the big TV news today is more along personnel lines. NBC Universal is expected to announce 41-year-old Jeff Zucker's promotion to CEO tomorrow. He's been running NBC's television group for the past couple of years. Joe Adalian covers television for Daily Variety. Joe, good to have you with us.
Thank you, sir.
What is it about Jeff Zucker that gets him this job at the age of 41?
Jeff Zucker is sort of relentless. When he has a goal, he really won't stop until he's got it accomplished. You know, he is somebody who is very ambitious, who wants big things, who's very competitive. When he ran the Today Show, he would not stop till he was number one, until he was a dominant number one. He's a guy who at one point was exec producing NBC Nightly News and a news magazine, which is far too much for any one human being, and of course ultimately had to give one up. But he wanted to do both, and he went for it. He's someone who has the drive and passion to get what he wants, and I think the announcement we're probably going to hear tomorrow from NBC is sort of the culmination of what apparently is something he's been working on for probably the better part of 10 years.
You know, don't get me wrong, I'm sure he's a talented guy, but when he took over NBC, it was must-see television, and now, you know, it's not.
What Jeff Zucker wasn't good at doing is developing new hit shows. What's key to the job of president of entertainment is to keep the pipeline fed with new, interesting hits. And while he did get NBC into the reality game, he didn't have the sort of relationships with the Hollywood community to get new and interesting hit shows on the air. He didn't really like Hollywood. Hollywood didn't like him. And I think the result is a couple of years in which NBC just didn't develop many good shows. But that's not the be-all, end-all of running a television company. And besides, NBC Universal is more than a television company. It's a TV and film company. Bob Wright ran NBC for 21 years, most of them very well, and he never developed a single hit show in his life.
Is NBC better now than it was, say, a year ago? I mean, has Zucker started to turn things around?
By people he's hired, yes. He hired Kevin Reilly a few years ago to run NBC Entertainment, put Angela Bromstead in charge of the studio, and together the two of them have come up with a number of successful hit shows. My Name is Earl, Heroes, and The Office is a big hit too now. So the quality is sort of coming back, and Jeff Zucker can take credit for that because he hired those people. They work for him. Getting the NFL is something also that's helped NBC. It cost them a lot of money, but it's worked. You know, overall, is NBC better off than it was a year ago? Absolutely. Is it all because of Jeff Zucker? Not necessarily.
A lot of press today and over the weekend that Zucker's getting this job because Jeff Immelt, the chairman and CEO of GE, which is NBC's parent company, thinks that you need a young guy to be able to capture the new internet age and digital medium and younger audiences. Do you think that necessarily follows?
I don't know if you need a younger guy, but you need the next guy. And the fact is, Bob Wright was probably going to retire in about a year anyway. He was on the way out. He was at the end of his career at NBC. So knowing that you're going to have to replace him, if you've decided that your guy is Jeff Zucker, why wait? Things are happening so quickly now. In the past year, television has changed so dramatically, so many deals with internet companies, with YouTube, that you really can't afford to miss a year. And while Bob Wright is a very talented man and probably deserves to stay on until he decides he wants to go, if you know your next generation is Jeff Zucker, why have him waiting around when things need to be done? And you don't want to have the last generation in power when you need to have the next generation.
How important is NBC to GE's overall financial health?
It's one of the most important companies in terms of GE's public image. It's the showcase. It's the centerpiece of what NBC does. They're not exactly bragging about their turbine engines. but in terms of overall money, look, it's important. NBC Universal now is not just about a TV network. It's about many big cable networks like USA, Sci-Fi, and Bravo that make millions and millions of dollars for the bottom line. It's about a movie studio that, in success, can make hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's an important part of NBC's bottom line, to be sure, but it's not make or break.
Joe Dalian's the TV editor at Daily Variety. Joe, thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
It wasn't a bad day for the dollar on the foreign exchange markets, down a bit against the Japanese yen, but stronger against the British pound and the euro. You know, it's only been 5 years that there's been a euro, and some in Europe might be having some buyer's remorse. France did more than anything to make the single currency happen, but a recent poll shows more than half the population of that country now thinks abandoning the franc was a mistake. During winter clearance sales in one small town in the center of that country, the franc is still legal tender. John Lawrenson reports now from Leblanc, France.
Et ça vous fait 950 francs, monsieur, s'il vous plaît.
A shopkeeper gives the price in francs, and the customer lays down those once familiar colourful notes with their portraits of Cézanne and Eiffel, the man who built the tower. The French franc is alive and well and living in a town called Leblanc.
Le franc, ça permet aux gens de dépenser de l'argent qu'ils ne pouvaient plus dépenser.
This was the idea of Sylvie Mouen-Locoz, the head of the local shopkeepers association who runs the clothing store across the street. She says letting people spend francs they still have lying around has doubled her business. When the sales are over, she'll take them to the Bank of France, which has pledged to exchange francs for euros till 2012, if the European currency lasts that long. For some, it's a pleasure to be using the franc again. At the bistro in the main square, most wish they'd never given it up.
The changeover from the French franc to the euro has been a catastrophe. Before, a loaf of bread cost 3 francs. Now it's a euro, which doesn't sound like much, but it's more than twice the price. And the franc was ours, like the French cockerel. It's our tradition that we've lost.
When we had the franc, I managed to put a bit of money to one side, though I'm not on a big salary, $22,000 a year. Now I can't afford to.
L'euro nous fait couler quelque part. We're sinking with the euro. For me, it's the currency of an occupying power, nothing else. That's going to cause all kinds of trouble one day.
L'euro, c'est la plus grosse bêtise qui a pu exister.
The euro is the stupidest thing that ever existed. I'm for our franc, and I think it would be very good to go back to using it again.
Ce serait très bien de remettre le franc.
If the opinion polls are to be believed, most French people are now hostile to the money they use. Jacques Millard, one of the few members of parliament that always opposed the euro, is happy the majority now sees things his way.
French people react in a good way because they see that the euro did not really achieve what has been promised, you know. They have been told that there will be growth, that, of course, it will help to create jobs. And they see there is no jobs created. They see the growth is still very slow. And they see inflation.
But according to the National Statistical Office, inflation has been running at less than 2% for the past 4 years. What's going on here is, for most people, the steep rise in the price of staples like an espresso in a cafe or a loaf of bread has been offset by the fall in the price of goods such as computers. But for poorer people who buy fewer computers, that doesn't work. And it's these same people who increasingly see the euro as part of a surrender of the nation's power to protect and provide for them.
Euro is a symbol of a lack of independence.
But Gérard Mermet, who publishes a yearly survey of trends in French society called Francoscopie, says the French don't appreciate the benefits of the euro.
With euro, you don't have to pay change fees when you travel abroad in the Euroland. There is no possible devaluation in the future.
This, says the opinion polls, is not getting through to 52% of the French people. Back at Leblanc, they love the French franc more than ever. In Leblanc, central France, this is John Lawrence for Marketplace.
2, 4, 6, 8, 9, 950.
Merci, monsieur.
Coming up,
it's discreet. You know, you can sit in a boardroom or an airplane, rub it on your hands, and no one even knows you're doing it.
Neat and tidy nicotine. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials flickered up 8 points today, just a tiny fraction of 1% to finish at 12,661. The NASDAQ stumbled 5 points, 0.2% to close at 2470. The S&P 500 played more or less dead today, shedding a point and closing down 0.1% for a final resting place of 1446. Microsoft fell nearly 2% today on suggestions its shares won't get a leg up from its new Vista operating system. Hewlett-Packard rose 1.75%. The PC maker is buying software maker Bristol Technology. Walmart skipped up almost 1%. The retailer estimated on Saturday that January sales rose more strongly than expected at stores open at least a year. Overseas, markets were mixed. Back home, bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note ticked down to 4.81%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, supporting the role that an experienced financial advisor can play in building a well-rounded financial program. The Work and Family Desk is supported in part by the Foundation for Child Development, promoting a new beginning for public education from pre-kindergarten through third grade. Ever hear a song on Marketplace but you just can't place it? Or maybe it's the first time you've heard it and you want to hear it again. Just click on the archive section of our website. We list the songs we play on every show in that day's rundown. There's even a link to the Public Radio Music Source, where you can buy the song and help fund public radio programming. It's all at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Senate Budget Committee examines the cost of the Iraq War. The House Oversight and Government Reform Committee holds a hearing on waste, fraud, and abuse in connection with Iraqi reconstruction. And the FAA opens its annual Commercial Space Transportation Conference to discuss industry innovations, opportunities, and challenges. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Manufacturing jobs are harder to come by than they used to be. Look no farther than the U.S. auto industry if you need confirmation of that one. But the service sector is expanding more than expected. The people who keep track of that, a group called the Institute for Supply Management, said today the service sector grew in January for the 46th straight month. So if you're looking for work there, your odds are probably pretty good. Commentator Moira Mannion's been reading The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, which prompted these thoughts about workers of the future.
Do you have problem employees? Do they call in sick, complain, get pregnant, or just not do the job the way you want it done? Well, Morlock Biotech has a solution for you. Hi, I'm Bambi Eloy, and I'm a genetically altered employee. Morlock Biotech creates workers who lack the protein in the brain responsible for free will. I was born with a biological aversion to unions, benefits, and minimum wage. The very idea of a paid vacation gives me the dry heaves. Since I'm completely unable to make a decision, I'll do whatever you want, however you want it, whenever you want it. I'm also sterile, so you won't have to worry about maternity leave. I'm violently allergic to paychecks, so you only have to pay a modest weekly fee to my parent company. I can't have money because the side effect of having no free will is an addiction to shoes, handbags, and celebrity magazines. That actor Jason Isaacs who plays Lucius Malfoy is dreamy, isn't he? All of my biotech brothers and sisters are made in America. We're the solution to illegal immigrants and outsourcing abroad. We come in all colors and languages, and in the event of a natural disaster, like a hurricane, tsunami, or avalanche, we're completely edible. This is Bambi Eloy telling you to call Morlock Biotech and order your perfect workforce today. Well, I'm not telling you. I'm genetically altered, so I can't do that. Ow. Brain hurts. Ow.
Moira Mannion is a writer and a service sector worker in Minneapolis, Minnesota. To send us your thoughts, go to marketplace.org. Click on that link that says contact. We mentioned last week that Altria is spinning off its stake in Kraft Foods to concentrate on the tobacco business. Altria is the parent company of Philip Morris, which makes Marlboro, among other brands of cigarettes. Shares of the world's biggest tobacco company are up 20% over the past year, despite the fact that you can't smoke in too many places anymore. So now, of course, there's a product trying to capitalize on those smoking bans. Nicogel is just that, a gel with nicotine in it that you rub on your hands. Marketplace's Sean Cole is a smoker. We figured he'd be the perfect guy for the story.
Well, the first thing I had to do was try it.
Is this seat a main place?
I went to the Walgreens down the street where they had it at the counter by the phone cards and candy bars and lip balm. A blue and white box, flip top, like a Marlboro hard pack but skinnier. Each box contains 10 little packets of Nicogel. Each packet contains about a tenth of the nicotine of a cigarette. And I hadn't had a cigarette yet that morning, and I really needed one.
This is $6.99.
Okay.
I'm going to need your birthday.
My birthday? Oh, because it's a nicotine product. Yep. 11, I can't remember. 11-19-71.
Nicogel is an adult product, and our goal is not for children to use this thing, and we want to make sure that children don't use this, so we're taking every precaution to do that.
This is Bill Whalen, owner of Blue Whale Worldwide, which is distributing Nicogel in the U.S. He says it contains tobacco extract. Not just nicotine, but all 1,800 components of the plant. So it does a better job of curbing your Jones than Nicoderm or Nicorette, he says. But he doesn't claim that Nicogel can help you quit smoking, the way the patch and the gum do.
Oh, no, not at this moment. Nicogel is designed to replace the cigarette in the places where you can't smoke and where it's inconvenient to smoke. But at the same time, by doing that, you are reducing a person's tobacco consumption. It's a great thing. And you're also taking away the secondhand smoke. It's discreet. You know, you can sit in the boardroom or an airplane.
Or in your car in the Walgreens parking lot.
Directions. Open packet.
It's odorless.
It smells kind of funny, too.
Then you rub it into your hands and you're done.
And a few minutes later...
I think I feel a little... relieved in a way.
But I didn't want to feel relieved in a way. I wanted to feel sated, which is what Nicogel promises right on the label. Cigarette satisfaction in a hand gel.
I suppose it has taken the edge off. I don't feel so suicidal now.
All nicotine addicts know that feeling. A special kind of panic that sets in when you know you can't smoke for a while. Some smokers use Nicorette to get through it. Others turn to chewing tobacco, or moist smokeless, as it's known in the industry.
What is hindering cigarettes is actually helping moist smokeless.
David Bishop is a partner at the retail consultant group Willard Bishop. He says sales of moist smokeless tobacco went up 8 or 9% last year and are expected to climb again this year, whereas cigarette sales have been declining since the late 80s, he says, which is probably why a couple of the top cigarette companies are starting to test market another smokeless product, spitless too, little tobacco pouches that you tuck in your cheek.
I think it's understandable for cigarette companies to look for alternative growth vehicles that will offset the declining profit from cigarettes.
So this is the climate Nicogel's jumping into. The question is it a friend or an enemy of the cigarette companies? Bill Whalen says his company honestly wants people to smoke less, but if they smoke less and less, they eventually won't need Nicogel. But down the road, Whalen says, after more clinical trials, he does finally want to market Nicogel as a quitting aid. Sadly, I don't think it would work in my case. After about an hour on the gel, I was frantic for a cigarette.
Question is, where are my cigarettes?
I mentioned this to Bill Whalen.
Interesting. Are you how many packs a day are you? Are you a one-pack-a-day guy?
I'm about a one-pack, maybe three-quarters of a pack-a-dayer.
During our efficacy tests, we look in, and right now we're looking at about 87% of people that use Nicogel get it, and it works perfectly for them. There's probably 13% of the people that, frankly, it's not strong enough for.
Great. This is probably the only time when I haven't wanted to be exceptional. Whalen said some people need two packets of Nicogel, so I tried that, and I didn't smoke for an hour and 18 minutes. In Boston, I'm Sean Cole for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
This final note, Coke and Nestle think they have a great new product. It's called Enviga. They claim drinking the stuff burns more calories than there are in the drink. Nestle says three of the green tea drinks a day at $1.49 a pop will burn an average of 106 calories. The Attorney General of Connecticut, though, is skeptical. Richard Blumenthal announced today that his office would investigate. He said without credible scientific evidence, the companies are practicing, and here we quote, voodoo nutrition. A Coke spokesman says the drink isn't being marketed as a diet aid. That didn't stop a lawsuit, though, from the Center for Science in the Public Interest just last week. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 8 points. We'll call that one flat. The Nasdaq dropped 5 points, about 0.2%. The S&P 500 lost a point. That's about 0.1% there as well. Our producers include Jane Lindholm, Brett Neely, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Next time on the program, lending and borrowing get personal.
For me to go into a bank, they would probably determine that I'm not a good risk and say, sorry, can't help you. Whereas on Prosper, it would be a situation, well, tell me a little bit more about it. What exactly happened? How are you going to prevent that from happening again?
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.